comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted you're here, and I'm delighted to be here. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. Over the weekend, of course, I was busy with a lot of things. One of those tasks every weekend is getting the K-Files out. It begins on Friday night after the show. And I have to admit that this weekend was, with the K-Files, it was publishing hell. I have no idea what happened. We got it out. But, you know, I use a template for that, and I created the template, so you would naturally expect if something goes wrong with the template, I would know right immediately what to do to fix it, right? I couldn't figure it out. It spread the K-Files all over the page, and I did everything I could to fix it. I finally just sent it out like it was. I apologize for that. But I just ran out of time. Late Sunday, I just went ahead and got it out. I'd done everything I could to fix it. But we now have a brand new template from the ground up. And it looks good. So you should not have to hunt all over the page to read the K-Files next time. But look, if you're not subscribed to the K-Files, you didn't get in on any of that fun. And imagine that. All of that fun, and it was free. All you have to do is just go to the website and click where it says K-Files. That's it. Just go to the website, click where it says K-Files, and then subscribe. It's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, though most people don't. Most people stay with us forever. And we would love for you to, but it's up to you, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. We don't rent that list out, the email list. We don't loan it out. We don't rent it. We don't sell it. No third-party advertisers get their hands on it. None of that. All right? It's just for us, for the K-Files. That's it. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed. Tonight, we're going to be talking with Jerry Wills. He has completed, you know, we had the privilege of having him on the show last week when he and Kathy were traveling, or was it the week before? I'm an old guy, I forget. Anyway, they were able to find where I have hidden the studio in my deep underground base, and They were on the air live with me in studio. Well, they've completed their tour. They have finished their most recent tour of the U.S. And we're going to get an update on that. They also have plans for new expeditions, and we're going to hear about some of that. And who knows what else we'll talk about, because Jerry and I both like to talk. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will be talking with Jerry Wills. Oh, what a great way to start the show. You know, I never squeal like that. I never do that unless I've got Jerry Wills on the show. It must be one of those Jedi mind tricks or something. I don't know. But I'm delighted to have Jerry with us this evening, and he's one of the top favorites of our audience, and a good friend of mine. He is the executive producer at Expeditions TV, and he is also the associate host here at the Kevin Smith Show. Jerry, welcome back to the show. We're delighted to have you back.
Hello, Kevin. Thank you for having me back. Hello, everyone.
It was really a particular pleasure for me, honestly, to have you and Kathy here in the studio. And I've been here in this location now for almost 2 years, and you are the first people that I have had in the studio for an interview. And it was really a pleasure to have you here. Probably the last people I will have as well, because as you know, most people cannot find the entrance to the bunker. And then that climbing down, because the elevator doesn't work, but climbing down 40 stories into the ground to find the studio is pretty tough.
Well, it was a little harrowing, and there was a little bit of condensation on the rungs of the ladder. I slipped a little bit, but, you know, Kathy just went right down it. Just, you know,
no
she's
problem.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as I said, delighted that you were here in the studio and delighted to have you back. I know you're glad to be back home after all that traveling.
You know, that's kind of a mixed bag. A few things developed on the road that I'll tell you and the audience about. And it's nice to be back. But, you know, it is so much better to be out there on the go, meeting people and doing things. I mean, we're back here at the Expedition TV studio and here at our home in Phoenix. I guess there's a certain amount of comfort with that. But being out there is much better, in my opinion.
Well, you know, I have to admit, in a way, I understand that because although I don't make a lot of public appearances, I do make some. You know, mm-hmm. I speak at a conference here and there, and as a matter of fact, I have one in November out in the Phoenix area. You guys, I don't know if you'll still be around there, but in November, I'll be out there. But I speak at a few conferences here and there, and I love to get out and meet people and shake hands and get to see people face to face that I get to talk with, you know, here on the show. Mm-hmm. And I like that too. But I'm not like you. I hate the travel part.
Well, yeah, that's a little bit different wiring, I suppose, between you and I. It seems like being on the go and traveling is more of the norm than just being here, you know, sitting around and working in this place.
Well, I always like it after we get there. You know,
yeah.
I hate the, and it doesn't matter whether it's by, you know, automobile or train or plane, if I'm flying, it doesn't matter. I just don't like the travel part. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you this, though. You know, when I was overseas in Eastern Europe, I traveled by train a lot. Mm-hmm. And traveled all over Romania by train, traveled all over Serbia and Bosnia, northern Bosnia. Well, not actually, come to think of it. No, they didn't have the train service restored in northern Bosnia. We had to drive from there up into Serbia to catch the train. But, I like that because, you know, you rent you a little cabin, you know, it's got beds in it, And you go in there and lay down and just stretch out and go to sleep. And then when you wake up, you're where you're supposed to be. So that's not too bad. But
Then here's the caveat to what I was telling you, Kevin. I mean, taking that as a cue in point. Mm-hmm. What happened while we were on the road is that, as you and many of the listeners know, Kathy and I have been looking for an RV for years. And happened to find one in, forgot the name of the place, up in South Dakota. So we went up, took a look. It was what we were looking for, and we bought it. It's actually a travel trailer, 35-foot trailer. So on our way back, we took a week, and we slept in our own bed every night as we came back home.
Mm-hmm.
Quite an adventure, and certainly a much more pleasant journey doing things that way.
Well, yeah. I might could handle that, except you have to wake up and get behind the wheel and drive.
Well, we love driving.
Hate driving. You know that, don't you?
I know that. Yes, I do.
I'm an excellent... This sounds like a Rain Man. I'm an excellent driver. I actually am. You know, I've been through all the police driving school and all that stuff, you know. But I spent so many years on patrol where every single day... I had to put on the gun and the vest and the uniform and then go climb into a patrol car and for hours and hours drive every single day. Yeah. So for me, when I get into a car, if I have to drive, it's not that I can't. I can. But it's just, to me, it's like, oh, my goodness. This is just like going to work again. You know, I don't like it. So I drive Nikes these days.
Yeah, well, that's good for your health.
Yeah, I guess so. Jerry, tell us, give us a little of an update on this tour. What were you up to? Where did you go? You did some of that whenever you were with us here in the studio, so we've heard part of it, but that's okay. But just give us an update on this whole tour. What was this about?
Well, essentially what we did, second year in a row, I think it is, maybe third, there are places that we have gone, we've been invited to, where I put on an event called An Evening with Jerry Wills. And during that evening, there are folks that have different infirmaries, different things wrong with them. And it's $50, and people show up, and it's usually a packed room wherever we show up at. This year, we went to Memphis, and we were there for a few days, and then went on to Burgettstown, which is just right outside of Pittsburgh. That's on a Friday night. And then on Saturday night, Saturday afternoons, I teach a class on energy. You know, how I do what I do, and I try to impart some knowledge on to the folks who want to know more about that. And part of the fun thing for that class is, you know, there are a lot of folks who say, you know, well, if I could just see the aura, or I've heard of the aura, but I can't see it, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I've built something that allows people to see their aura. And before folks leave on Saturday afternoon, they have seen the energy that's around their hands and their hands of their friends and so forth, and start playing with it and start developing a skill. And it's always a big hit. Folks just love it when they can see the result of their energy. And, you know, I think that it's a big deal, because the thing that has historically happened in the psychic community, the metaphysical community, is there are always folks who say they can see the aura. They can read the aura or whatever. And that leaves everyone else feeling like they're a little bit less than in tune because they can't see it. This gives them an opportunity to find out how they can, and show them what it looks like. And this device works very well. I think there's only two people in the past few years who just couldn't really see anything. Everyone else, and that's hundreds and hundreds of people, have seen it quite well and have gone on and developed their abilities from there. There's a part of the mind that when you click this cog into place, the intellectual part of the mind is going to say, ah, there is something, it's all right if you see it. And from that point on, that cog is turned, and you do see the fields around things quite easily afterwards.
So you see the aura around people, right?
Yeah, I do.
Does that bother you any? I mean, because I don't. I don't see aura. I would think if I every person I looked at was glowing all these different colors off of them, I might be a little psyched out there.
Oh, Lordy. Well, you know something? It would just be a little overwhelming. I had years and years and years ago, I had to develop a technique to keep it turned off because it was too, it was just too disturbing. It was disorienting. So I know how to key it on, key it off, ignore it if I need to ignore it, I suppose is another way of putting it. But if you were seeing it all the time, I mean, imagine, Kevin, and I did this just recently, there was a mosquito, and I just don't like mosquitoes at all. So I killed it. And I hadn't turned this cog backwards or turned this off or got to where I could ignore seeing the energy. I killed the mosquito and a little poof of light came out as I squashed it. And I felt bad because that's life force energy. And I'm usually so, unconscious about that when it comes to mosquitoes. But just seeing a little poof and then there it goes is like, ah.
Well, when you did that, when you squished that mosquito and that little poof of energy came out, was there another little associated poof with that of West Nile virus coming out? I think you ought to kill all of them.
Well, you know what? I never thought about that. I was just looking at the bluish pinkish hue that was like smoke between, it was right between my fingers, just psh, like that. I didn't look for that.
Well, I don't hate mosquitoes, but they carry everything nasty. Malaria, West Nile virus, you name it, they pick it up and carry it. They are like vermin transport.
They are. And you know something, Kevin, the thing that most people don't realize, these deer ticks that bite people and they get Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. If they bite something that has Lyme disease and they're drinking the blood of the host, mm-hmm. Well, that Lyme disease is in the proboscis, the needle, and they bite the next person, they're pushing in and squeezing that blood into the next person. So some folks who end up with Lyme disease have never been bit by a tick. It's because of mosquitoes. And it's just nothing you can do about it except just kill them, keep away from them, do whatever you need to do. When we're in the jungle, malaria and yellow fever, there's also dengue fever.
Yeah.
And these things are very real and they're very horrible. I've seen someone with malaria and with dengue fever and equine encephalitis. I had a touch of that myself, the equine encephalitis. It was difficult to overwhelm. And it's because of mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. Pure and simple. And, when we go down to the jungle, we have to, we use permethrin on our clothes. It lasts for 2 weeks. And we use DEET on all the exposed areas.
Garlic and B1.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. I haven't tried it. I don't like garlic. But
I take garlic capsules, man. Take a couple of them every morning and a couple of B1 tablets every morning, and mosquitoes will stay away.
Well, I think Kathy's inclined to give that a try, so I'll let you know how it works for us down there.
Worked for me.
Yeah.
All right. So you went to these places, and you did these events. And what's the purpose of doing the events? I mean, what do people get out of that?
Well, the folks who show up for the evening, the Friday evening, and like I said, there are usually quite a few. I think both nights, Memphis and Pittsburgh, I was going, thanks, Kat, coffee time. I think I was going to like 1 or 2 in the morning. And what they get out of it, basically, you know, instead of having an appointment with me, maybe they can't afford that. So they come and see me during the evening. And that's really how it all started here in Phoenix years ago, is for folks who wanted to have a session with me. They didn't want an hour session. They couldn't afford it, but they could afford something. And so they showed up and did the, you know, the afternoon or the evening with Jerry Wills part. And what they get out of it, well, here's a good example. The very first lady that I worked on in Pittsburgh, I think I told you about this last show. She had a problem with her foot. And I worked on it. About 15 minutes later, she's walking around. She doesn't have any problem with her foot at all. It had been broken in 3 places, and it had been well over a year since they'd released her from doctor's care. It just hurt. So she had to wear this plastic boot with padding. And once I got finished, she was pounding her foot on the floor, took the boot out to the car, put on her regular shoes. She was fine. Mm-hmm. And that happens over and over and over again.
No, we talked just about that, one young man who had a broken jaw. And,
oh, yeah. Josh.
Josh, yeah. And you worked with him. And he called in, and I asked him, how's the jaw? And he said, great, thanks to yeah. Jerry Wills.
He was pretty shocked. He'd gotten actually, it's a fractured jaw, very bad fracture, a lateral fracture on his jawbone. From playing basketball, he got elbowed. And there's nothing they could do for him. You know, it just has to heal, and it just hurts. So he was the last person, I think, like 1:30 in the morning, he came up, and I was just really fading. I was getting so tired. And I don't know, I probably spent 10 minutes with him. It didn't take much to regenerate the bone back together again. It was already touching, so I just had to, you know, rematerialize that fracture into a solid form.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this.
But nothing's hotter than the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jerry Wills. And Jerry, when we went away for break, we were talking about you know, what happens at these events. And so you were just talking about Josh and how with a fractured jaw you were able to get him going, got that fused back together. And that's a good thing. That's a very, very good thing. Is there anything else about this tour that you wanted to share with us, or is that pretty well summarize where you've been, what you've been doing?
It was about 5,000 miles. And, well, let's see. The only other thing that really was significant was the UFO that Kathy saw the last night that we were there. That was pretty interesting. We're still looking into that. Now that we're home, she has better resources to draw from. But, you know, it was just a lot of driving, a lot of going across country, meeting a lot of interesting folks. And we look forward to doing it again. And when we get this trailer, this travel trailer, outfitted because we're going to put the Expeditions TV studio in there, as well as everything else, and probably pack this place up and close it down. So, you know, we'll be able to do broadcasts from wherever we are, and that's going to be a pretty exciting time. That's the.
You've taken some big steps with, at least big steps toward some big steps.
Mm-hmm.
My hat is absolutely bugging me. I can't get it. It's the magic hat. I can't do the show without it, but I can't get it to set right.
Let me see if I can adjust that for you just a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Well, that feels much better, Jerry.
Yeah,
much better.
Psychic energy towards the magic hat.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, well, you know, Harry Potter's got his wand. Kevin Smith has his hat.
Mm-hmm.
It's the magic hat. Okay, now, I want to go back to something that we've dealt with here on... did I say something that was funny?
Just the magic hat. I love it. You know, and it is magic.
Oh,
it's great.
Well, you know, it turns me into the Harry Potter of talk radio. I want to go back to something that you did a few months ago. And it absolutely was pace setting, and that was going into Bulgaria to meet with Dr. Filipov.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Filipov, for those who don't know, is an astrophysicist, and he is the number two guy in charge of Bulgaria's version of NASA. And he's written all kinds of papers. He's worked in the Soviet, back in the Soviet Union days. He's worked in the Soviet space program, which is one of the premier space programs on the planet. And written all kinds of peer-reviewed papers and so forth. And Dr. Filipov made a statement a couple of years ago that... we are not alone. We are in contact with extraterrestrials. And I won't go into further details. I mean, there are further details, and that's all in our archives. So join, be a member, and then you can catch
the archives.
But Jerry and I talked about, I read it in the Bulgarian newspaper the day it was published, and within 3 or 4 hours after it was published, Jerry was on the phone with Dr. Filipov talking with him. Dr. Filipov was very excited, said, yes, it's all true, and the world has got to know. I am a scientist, and it is my duty to let the people know, to let the world know. And he agreed to an interview. And actually said to Jerry on the telephone, Jerry had asked, you know, do you have evidence of this? And he said, yes, you come here and I'll show you what we've got. So Jerry then made arrangements for me and him to be on the phone with Dr. Filipov the next day to make travel plans to go to Bulgaria and do this interview. Mm-hmm. Dr. Filipov disappeared for about 10 days. When he reappeared, it was in front of a Croatian TV news camera that had come to Bulgaria. And they kept pressing him on, you know, are you in contact with extraterrestrials? Did you say these things that are in the newspaper? And he said yes. And... are you in contact? And they asked him three times, and all three times, Jerry, what did he say?
He said, if I tell you, I'm paraphrasing, if I tell you they will kill me.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how he phrased.
Yeah, he said that's the information that if I tell you, they will kill me.
Yeah.
And,
three times. I saw the video.
Yeah. Now, that video was never aired. That's pretty interesting, too. They never aired that video. That video shows a man who has been subjected to some rather severe handling and sleep deprivation.
He looks rough.
Yeah. He looks quite different. In fact, in that video, he looks years older than he looked when you talked to him 2 years later.
Yeah, it was surprising. He really looked quite good, you know, mm-hmm. comparatively.
Well, it was groundbreaking because you went right on into Bulgaria, and you went right to his office, and you sat down, and you had over an hour conversation with him. And there are a couple of things about that still, people who don't know the story, don't follow the story, you know, they're surface surfers.
Mm-hmm.
They would miss this. But when you talked to him, you had to ask, you asked him at least twice if he was in contact or had ever met extraterrestrials. Both times, he said no.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, before the camera, he didn't know the camera wasn't running. Before it ever started, in a loud voice, he just made sure that that was stated.
Yeah, that, let me make this clear. You know, I've never had any contact with extraterrestrials. But then, what's really cool about this is later in the interview, he, on his own, brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you asked me if I had ever met any strange people. And then he tells you the story. And what we hear is the story of him and other scientists there meeting with people from off planet.
Yeah.
And
what a story.
The second thing that was interesting was when he said that we, you know, they stopped coming to visit us, but, you know, I know their coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's really interesting, Jerry, because the Bulgarian word for address, if he meant to say address, and he was just grasping for what word in English, well, it's the same word. Bulgarian, it's address. You know, I know their address. He didn't say that. He used a much more complicated word, coordinates, which has a different meaning.
Well, he's a genius, and he was padding the information with little catchphrases, things where you could read between the lines. That's my opinion. I couldn't prove that, of course, but there were a few times that he had things to say that, if you listen carefully and read between the lines, you end up hearing a little bit different than what he's actually saying. But you have to take it out of context. That's why I tell folks who have watched the video, watch it a few times. Listen very carefully, because you're going to hear things here that are going to make you think.
Mm-hmm. Well, he lives in an environment which, you know, I've had people that say, well, Bulgaria today is a democracy. He ought to be able to just speak freely. And if you believe that fiction about the democracies of this planet, oh, my God, folks, wake up. I mean, if you think there is freedom of speech, there's a video right now on YouTube, and it shows a Marine Corps veteran being arrested for what he posted on Facebook.
Yeah.
No, there's not. There's not freedom of speech. Don't think there is. And especially if you're someone like Filipov in a position to know things that certain very powerful institutions and people don't want you to tell.
Yeah, that's right. He is in a position. He's a world-class figure. You know, meeting with him would be equivalent to maybe meeting up with Stephen Hawking. I mean, yeah. Filipov worked for 10 years with Carl Sagan.
Mm-hmm.
They were buddies. They worked together on these projects. Filipov's trying to figure out the dynamics of the event horizon around wormholes. And his hobby is extraterrestrials and the communication that he feels is being provided to us through crop circles. So he's pretty keenly involved, and he's really a very, very intelligent fellow. He struck me as being way up there in the genius category.
Oh, he certainly is. And if you read his CV, it's like 12 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly because of all the peer-reviewed papers he's published.
Right.
Yeah, unbelievable. But it was very, very interesting to hear him talk about how these people just showed up at his door. These strange people, young people, just showed up at his door at his office. And the reason is, see, I know how these security things work, especially in Bulgaria and other countries right in that area. On the surface, it may appear that there's a whole lot of freedom of movement happening and everything's just, but everywhere around every corner, there's some plainclothes security person watching everything that's going on. Not just one, around every corner. They're everywhere.
And yeah, we ran into them.
You know, I got arrested in Bulgaria.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, at the border.
I'm not surprised. You're such a troublemaker,
Kevin. Well, I was a troublemaker. The Bulgarian border guard was expecting me to pay him a little extra money and he would let me go on, you know. And he was saying that I had a car rented from a Swedish car rental agency, and he was telling me it was stolen. I wouldn't pay his bribe, so he arrested me. Alright, we have to take a break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills. And when we went away for break, Jerry, I was telling about being arrested in Bulgaria. This was years ago, right after they had disbanded communism there and become a democracy. Yeah, he wanted me to pay a bribe, you know, pay him some money, and he'd let me go. Otherwise, my car had forged papers.
And I bet you turned him inside out.
No. No, me? Jerry.
Yeah.
He told me, well, you can't cross a border. And I said, yeah, I'm crossing the border. And he said, you're going to have to turn around and go back to Kosovo. I said, not happening. He said, well, you have to go back to Macedonia. I said, not happening. He said, well, you have to move your car. I said, that's not happening either. You're illegal. He said, if you don't move your car, I'll arrest you. I said, I'm not moving the car. You're illegal. So he arrested me. And I had a Serb friend with me who was scared to death. And he held me for about 4 hours. After he arrested me, discovered a diplomatic passport in my pocket, and then he started sweating. And anyway, he finally let me go and said, okay, you can go, but you go straight across Bulgaria. Don't you stop. And I said, I'm going to stop anywhere I want to, anytime I want to. And so then I got stopped about every 10 kilometers by cops all the way across Bulgaria. Took me all night to get across Bulgaria.
They obviously had not seen that video that we just watched during the break.
Probably not. No, probably. But anyway, they made it very uncomfortable. All my other visits into Bulgaria have been very nice, and I like the country. But my point is that there's security everywhere. I mean, it's yeah. And it's that way in the United States now. You know, we have Americans spying on Americans, and we have the government, several agencies of the government, spying on everything you do, everywhere you go, everything you say. And then you have, you know, companies like, well, I won't name companies, but certain companies on the internet that just, you know, are basically the playground for the NSA and the CIA, and they just harvest everybody's information off of there. Well, it's that way in Bulgaria. And everywhere you go, every turn you make, you are being observed and watched by people who are just looking for a reason to arrest you.
Yeah, and we while we were there, we were aware of this. And, of course, we were, for the listeners, we were in touch with you, Kevin, and getting some pointers. And it was a little intimidating. Kathy didn't know as much about it as I did. I filled her in after we left. I didn't want her to be afraid. I didn't have a feeling anything bad was going to happen, but I was prepared emotionally for, you know, whatever. When we went walking across the pavilions with Professor Filipov, there were people watching us pretty closely. And it was like, what are you going to do? You just keep walking, you just keep talking, and you just say, whatever happens, happens. I'm here for a reason. I'm going to get this done.
Well, and you got it done. We showed it. You produced the documentary of it, and we showed that its world premiere right here in our members community. We do that from time to time, folks. We have special broadcasts, and you know, it's not part of the contract. It's just a gift, and but we do that once in a while. And so the very first people who ever saw this documentary called The Filipov Files was right here in the Kevin Smith Show members community in a private broadcast, and all of the members that wanted to could see it.
Yeah, and in the future, Kevin, whenever we have another premiere video, and we will have something coming up very shortly, as a matter of fact, we're going to offer it to the members community first as a premiere, as a gift to them, so that they have a chance to see it before anyone else in the world has a chance to. And the video I'm talking about, of course, is the one where we interviewed the fellow talking about the giants under Athens.
Yeah.
And I still have to process that video and get it ready to, you know, get it ready to put out there. But I'm going to be doing that this next week, and we'll get it to the members community. I'll let you know when that's ready.
Well, the Filipov Files, I mean, if you missed it as a member, or if you are a member and you saw it but you'd like to see it again, it's still available over at Jerry's site, Expeditions TV. Remember, he's the executive producer at Expeditions TV. So you can go to Expeditions TV. In fact, go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. And then under his picture, under that picture, it says show info. So if you click that, it'll pop open a little screen, a little window. And it has a link in that window. There's a link to Expeditions TV. And the reason I'm telling you is some people will spell out expeditions and they start E-X-P-E-D, and it's not. It's just the letter X, peditionstv.com. But when they get there, how do they get to this Philippoff Files documentary?
Well, there'll be a link. You'll see it on the page. I don't have a page open here. I can specifically point it out so I can tell you verbally, but you can't miss it. It says Expeditions TV members area. You'll click on that. It'll take you to a place where you put in information. This is a members area, just like yours, Kevin. Mm-hmm. And people that want to get into the members area, the only thing there right now are the Philippoff Files. It's $12 for 3 days. And
so they can watch it unlimited number of times over 3 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in high quality. It's not a little window that you're looking at. You can make it full screen. It looks great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all your stuff looks great, man. I've watched all your films over there that you have of your expeditions, you know. Mm-hmm. I've watched all of those. And they look great. And are those free?
Yeah, all the videos at Expeditions TV that we've done up to the Philippoff Files, all of those are free. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is taking a look at the costs and how they've climbed, not for the website, because really that's not so much, and I'm doing it, you know, in my spare time, but going and doing an expedition. We have several we have on the books we want to do. And these things cost thousands of dollars, just like Philippoff Files. That was, what was that, Ken? About $1,200. We were already in Athens, and it was $1,200. It would have been closer to $5,000 had we just flown from here to there and done this. So the concept is that $12, 3 days, if enough people were to do this, then it would fund us to go and do part two of Cumbamayo or whatever the next expedition is. And there are some really extraordinary places we want to go and get the video and bring it back for everyone. And I think $12 is really kind of cheap. Mm-hmm. Maybe some people don't, but I think it's, you know, 12 bucks, you know.
Well, the Philippoff Files was sort of a departure for you from your normal genre for Expeditions TV.
Yeah.
Expeditions TV, you are out there in the wilds of the jungles and looking for lost cities. Mm-hmm. This was a departure from that genre and really more in the genre of this show. Why did you decide you wanted to do that?
Well, principally because Philippoff had something to say. He talked to me. He was excited. He was, if you could have seen him, he probably had his hands waving in the air. He was almost yelling in the phone, "We aren't alone. I've spoken to extraterrestrials. There are many of them, and we're having another meeting with them in the spring." And he was just so excited. And then all this stuff changed. I wanted to go over and get the story.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy and I wanted to do it. It wasn't just me. It was Kathy as well. And I know you wanted the story, too. And the listeners here at KSS, they wanted to know, what is the story? So we decided it was necessary to do this. It wasn't easy for us to do. Because to do it, we basically had to take money out of our pockets that we couldn't afford to take out.
Mm-hmm.
To go and do this, it was difficult for us.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll pick up with robbing the pockets here in just a moment. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jerry Wills. And as we went away for break, Jerry, you were explaining that you had to take money out of your own pockets to go do this documentary and to just have this meeting and to interview and to video the interview with Dr. Filipov. And it was expensive.
Yeah, it was. You know, whenever we do these things, we take money out of our own pockets anyway. Because of something that's coming up, I was doing a cost analysis on what it costs us to do one of the programs. And I was, because I never pay attention to it. We just save up for as long as we can save up, and we go. But it turned out that to do just one of the episodes at Expeditions TV, just choose one, for example, Cumbe Mayo, episode 14, you're looking at somewhere around $6,000 to do one episode. And it sounds like a lot, perhaps, or it doesn't sound like very much if you're in the entertainment industry. But the truth is, if we had $10,000, we could do really quite a bit more. So with Filipov, we were already over there in Athens, and the reason why it was a little bit of a hardship for us is because we really didn't take money with us. We were going to use other means if this opportunity came up, and of course it did. So we really took our travel money that we were going to use to make sure we got home all right if any unforeseen things took place, and we spent it. And that's why it was a little scary for us. Otherwise, we'd have been fully prepared to have taken care of the situation. But I think the most important aspect of it is if the people, the viewers, the folks out there who are interested in what we're doing and the programming that we provide, just like for yourself, I mean, you've got one of the hottest, best shows on the planet. And I'm not just saying that because you're my friend. I believe this without a doubt that you do. I think we have a good quality product too. And if folks would just, you know, help a little bit to help us recover the costs, we could go farther than we've gone, and it wouldn't take so long in between episodes to accomplish more than we've accomplished so far. And that's the reason why we decided on $12. I mean, we've had, you know, hundreds of thousands of hits, and a lot of people from all over the world enjoy it. So we figured, you know, $12 isn't much, but that would really, really make a big difference. Yeah, interestingly, we received a card today from a Kevin Smith Show listener and a fan of Expeditions TV, who sent in a generous donation so that just because they like what they see there and everything is free. Mm-hmm. A surprise. But it was really well received. So these things help us to go a little bit further than we've gone and to do a little bit more than we've done. And that's the reason we did it that way.
Well, I would like to encourage anybody that has not seen the Filipov files to see this. I'm telling you, folks, this is groundbreaking, earth-shaking video. You got first, I mean, you got to listen to what Jerry tells you in the beginning, because he gets you up to speed on what is the Filipov story. Mm-hmm. And then once you know that story, then you watch and you listen and go all the way through and pay attention, because Dr. Filipov himself speaks between the lines.
Yeah,
and so pay attention. This is earth-breaking stuff, earth-shattering stuff. But I encourage you to go do that. And to do it, you just, to watch it, go over to expeditionstv.com and click on the link to the members area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you can pay your $12. And look, you know, for 3 days, you can watch that as many times as you want to. You can have friends over to your house and sit and have them watch it with you. I mean, this is good stuff, and it's a great value. So be sure you do that. Jerry, the last time you were on the show, you were in studio, mm-hmm. and you said that you had a big announcement that was coming, and you weren't ready to make it yet. And, well, actually, what people could not see, what they did not see, was when we talked about it between, during the break.
Right.
And you wanted to go ahead and tell it, and Kathy was saying no, so... what's the deal? You guys expecting a new Little Wills? Is that the deal?
Well, no. Boy, would that be a shocker, though.
Yes.
That would be a shocker.
A Little Wills would be a shocker.
Kathy's not in here to stop me. I don't see her anyplace. She's not... pinching me or anything. So you know what? I'm going to tell you something that she probably would stop me if I told this with her here. So I'll just make it quick.
All right, we can't hear you now though.
Oh, well, microphone. There yeah. we go. All right, here it is. In I think 2000-2001, we were in Peru and we went into this really dangerous area called the Tocachi Valley. It's dangerous because the Shining Path had their had themselves holed up there.
Mm-hmm.
6 weeks before we arrived, the Peruvian army had a firefight with them and wiped out quite a few, captured their leader in this place. Up this valley is where you find people who are growing really a whole mountain. It's just... foliage has taken off, and they've planted coca plants for harvesting the leaves to make cocaine. There are forests of marijuana there. Not that marijuana is bad, but some people think it is. They also have poppy fields growing back there. It is a wild, wild area. And it's dangerous because they, being the people of the mountains, they don't want anybody to go in there. The people who have gone in there have been special forces that have gone in, mercenary types, and apparently did quite a bit of damage. We don't know exactly what the stories are. We heard several, but probably best not to go into that right now. So we received a series of photos really from this area. We went up the Tocachi Valley, and Kathy saw this thing, this big, big stone with all these drawings on it. Within a few days of being there, she'd figured out it's a map, and we then took a look down this long valley going up towards the clouds, because it's the Andes. And we told the people, because they wanted to know what it meant, too. They'd lived there. They didn't know what it meant. And said, well, it means there's a city back there someplace. Oh, sure, we know about that. Is that what that stone means? Oh, yeah, there are several cities. Yeah, well, we know where they're at. Well, can we go? Okay, we'll take you. Plans were made, and we went. So the story, the big news, is that if everything works out, and I'll explain that in just a moment, but if everything works out, we're going to go back. Because one of the things that we found there, we call it the Doomsday Stone. And we call it that because the depiction of the figures on this large stone that's way up on near the top of a mountain, just way in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's just days hike back into this valley. it shows what we believe to be the end of the world for the people who drew it, who emblazoned this onto the stone. The end of the world meaning basically that there was a great flood or something, because the waters were raging over the Andes, according to the stone. And historically, there are sperm whale bones at 13, 14, 15,000 feet down at the Atacama Desert. It's several hundred miles south in Chile. And even in this region, there are areas where there are sandbars with shells and fish skeletons and so forth that are not indigenous to this area at all.
And at what altitude?
The sandbar, I think it's probably in the 14,000 foot range. It's just
with seashells.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we're trying to get a hold of the people that will allow us to go back in. We went in the first time with permission. We were the first white people to ever go in and come out alive. We went back in 10 days later because we'd found this and there was more. And we wanted to go back in and you know, because the camera had boogered up, you know. It was so wet. We only had a still camera. And we only got a couple of snapshots of it. They weren't that good. So we went back 10 days later. We got almost to where we were going. And we were turned back by our guide. And we ended up going back about 20 miles through the jungle to where the first base camp was. Going back the way we had come, in other words. And we waited there for days. Finally, we got up when I was awakened one morning because the guide came and said that some colonel or something was wanting to see me. Well, turns out Peruvian Special Forces had surrounded the place. Machine guns, black paint on the face. They were up in trees. They had leaves like tied to their helmets and their bodies, and camouflaged. There was a death squad that was coming to kill us, and had we not turned back, we probably wouldn't be here right now. Well, we want to go back, so we're trying to make arrangements to go back into this region and document the Doomsday Stone and whatever else, because we were also told that there is another lost city up the valley from Shunte. It's just another little village back there in the jungle. And this city is where this is where the gods lived, whoever the gods were. Now, to complicate the story further, we found out while we were in Athens that there's pieces of history we didn't know a thing about. And the gods of ancient Greece, there's evidence of those gods in Peru. Now, could they be the same gods that they're talking about lived in this city? I don't know. But no one's, except some locals, no one has been into this place. And we were invited to go there when we were passing back through, but it was, of course, you know, guys with machine guns saying, you've got to get out of here. So we didn't. But we want to go back. And we're making preparations to do just that. If we are, if we're successful in making contact with the people that we really need to get a hold of, because if we don't, who knows what's going to happen?
Oh, if you don't have permission to go into an area like that, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea, and I would go by myself, but I don't think I'd want to take Kathy, and I won't go without her, so I guess that leaves me not going as well. But I have a feeling we're going to be able to make contact. I have a feeling that it's going to turn out all right. The reason why Kathy wanted to kind of, you know, keep this to ourselves for the time being is principally because we haven't made contact, we haven't gotten permission, and I don't want to get everyone all riled up and excited that we're going to go on this great adventure, and then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So
now, this will not be one of the expeditions where you take members of the public with you.
No. Mm-hmm. No, that would just be foolish. If there were no bad guys in this area, there's still bad things there. There are 4 foot, 4.5 foot tall monkeys that will attack you. There are giant, we call them panthers, but they're a type of jaguar that lives up in the mountains there. They're really big, like 12, 15 foot long jaguars live up there. They're black. We call them a panther, but they actually have jaguar spots. It's interesting. They're just black with a little bit of shading. And there are also bears. I don't know what kind of bear it is. It's a, I ate some of it. I ate some of it, and it's a big black bear, but we've checked with bear experts a few times since we've gotten back, and everybody says, no, you're mistaken, there are no black bears in the Andes. And I tell them, but I've got a picture of it. I've got a picture of the skin, and I ate some of it. It is just black. Well, no, you're mistaken. That isn't the case. That's not what it is.
That's like the guy who's a big muckety-muck archaeologist that was standing right at the base of the Bosnian pyramids and said, the big pyramid there, and said, there's no such thing as pyramids in Europe. This is not a pyramid. Yeah, well, you know, some people can deny anything.
We turned the information over about the five lost cities that Kathy was able to locate to one of the leading researchers who's in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you're mistaken. Those are old Jesuit missions. They aren't missions. These things they rival Machu Picchu. They're similar in nature to the way it's built, similar like to Tequalip as well. But they're not Jesuit missions.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want to hear anything about it.
Well, you know, that may indicate she knows the stories about the ancient gods, and she knows that there's some truth to it. But at this point, let me say for our new listeners, when we talk about these gods, you know, that word has so much baggage. It's absolutely obese. And, you know, it's a word that we made up, that people made up. These were people who were not from this planet. They looked very much like us, except in many cases they were very, very tall. Mm-hmm. And kind of like Jerry, and taller. And they were not from this planet. And they had technology and abilities and skills and knowledge beyond anything that was here on Earth. And so those people who were alive at the time were in awe of them and their abilities, and they called them gods. But let me tell you what it takes to be a god. And Jerry, I think you would agree with this. You've been to some very primitive places. I have too.
Mm-hmm.
If you could take some power source to power, you know, have electrical power, maybe a battery, you know, automobile battery or something, and you had a microwave that would run on 12 volt, and you go into one of these primitive villages and you set that down, you invite everybody to touch it. See, it's not hot. And then you take some food and you put it in there and you punch the buttons. And 2 minutes later, here's a steaming plate of food that comes out of there. That's magic. Mm-hmm. And you're a god.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. The distinguishing difference between magic and science is knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's that sort of thing. So these gods, they did roam the earth and maybe still do. From time to time. How would you tell if it was a god? It would be hard for one of them to prove he's a god now because we have microwave.
Yeah.
But they may still have abilities yet beyond ours that would put us in awe. But they're not gods, really. That's what people called them. They revered them. They understood that these people, if they got upset, could hurt a whole bunch of people real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that reason, they were revered as gods. But they lived in cities. They lived in colonies. You know, one of the most amazing stories, Jerry, is the story of the Tuatha De Danann.
Not familiar with that.
No, Ireland. Just as the Anunnaki disappeared from the Mesopotamian Valley, the Tuatha De Danann appeared in Ireland, and they appeared. They came in flying machines, so many that it clouded the sun. It shielded the sun out. Landed on top of a mountain. Very interesting. Everybody says they're mythological, and yet there is a genealogy for the royal line that traces them right back to Mesopotamia.
Wow.
And so apparently, at least it's plausible that the Anunnaki, which is what the Sumerians called them, packed up and left and went over to Ireland and set up shop there.
Yeah, well, you know, the second largest gold mine in the world is in Peru and not too far away from where this location is.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, the big question is, where did the Tuatha De Danann go after all of this? You know what the mythology says? The native people who were there at the time were the Fearbolg. And they described the Tuatha De Danann as being very tall, and they had great technology and so forth. But they kind of just started building their own colony. And the Fearbolg decided, we've got to make contact. So they initiated contact and wanted to find out what were their intentions, and discovered that their intentions were pretty simple. Leave us alone. That was it. Leave us alone. We're doing our own thing here. The Fearbolg advised their king, you got to make a stand. You can't let these people come in here and just take over part of our land. And so they had a war. And when it was over, the Tuatha De Danann had won utterly, completely. And they rounded up the Fearbolg and they said, look, here's the deal. You could have had everything you already had, but you wanted to attack us. So now you're going to get 1/4 of Ireland. That's all. You're going to get 1/4 of this island. You choose which fourth. So they chose. They said, move and leave us alone.
You know, it's interesting, Kevin, because
Jerry, what else is interesting? We have a break.
Okay.
We'll pick up there when we come back. All right, folks. More after this, and the telephone lines are open.
You are listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest this evening, Jerry Wills. Jerry, I had to stop you in mid-speak there because the break was taking over, so the microphone is yours. I don't know if you remember what you were saying.
No, what was I talking about?
I have no idea what you were talking about. I'm
an old
guy.
Let's talk about it some more then.
All right. The telephone lines are open, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you are in the USA or Canada, be sure to give us a call. All right? We want to hear from you. You may be a first-time caller. That's great. We want to hear from you. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number. It works. Or you can do something else. You can go to the website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and there's a link right above it that says Flash Message. So if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can use that alternative means of getting in touch with us as well. All right, to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hello, John.
Hi, Jerry.
Go ahead, John.
I just want to say, Jerry, your journeys or trips just really sound just fabulous, and I wish you the best on those.
Thank you.
Yeah. What I want to talk about a little bit is, you know, when Filipov broke his story, like I always felt that he was really naive to take the stance that he did. I don't know how Kevin or you feel about that.
I agree with that you. Environment, in talking with him, he said that he was.
Pardon me?
When I spoke with him, he said that he was naive. He had no idea that this was going to happen to him. He said he didn't know that he was going to be in so much trouble. I didn't get that on camera. It's when we were walking, when he came to get Kathy and I were walking to his office complex. Going in, he's saying, "Well, I just, you know, I didn't have any idea this things were going to be like that." He was pretty shook up by it. He was amazed and surprised.
Well, I find that surprising, and I got a bit of a theory, and I'm going to wander just a little bit.
Sure,
but I reckon what he had going on in his mind was this was for all of humanity and be a really good thing, mm-hmm. and so he didn't think of any consequences.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He thought he was doing a service to the entire planet. By
exactly.
letting everyone
okay.
know.
So where I'm going to wander is, I'm going to go to Tesla, and it's a very similar story. He thought he was doing something great for humanity, and just got, you know, sideswiped and demolished.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very similar story.
Yeah. Very similar.
Right.
I agree.
And so... What I'm getting at, I was just thinking about this today, I'm thinking if both Filipov and Tesla were thinking more selfishly, they might have actually done better and been less naive.
Well, you're probably 100% spot on there. The thing is, if they had been acting more selfishly, they would not have had the opportunities or the insight to have done what they were doing. When a person is making something available for the greater good, it's a very altruistic thing to do. And I had to learn early on that there's no room in the world for that, really, because the people, the sharks that are out there, will just eat you up. So
okay, well, that's really all I had to say about it. I just, you know, was thinking about that today, and when I heard the Filipov story, I thought, you know, how ironic. And so for anyone that has something they want to give to humanity, I would say take a couple of steps back and rethink it.
You know, and that's really good advice. And there are people who have things that would be really good for humanity's sake. My advice would be make it for yourself, start dispersing it through the network of your friends, and then a little farther through their friends. Because doing it overtly like this, there are powers that control this planet that don't want this planet free. That don't want the knowledge to be out there and available. And as a result of that, they're going to see to it that you're shut down one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, John, thank you so much for the call. Interesting ideas.
That's good. Thanks, John.
All right, 623-444-5889. There is no way that I know of to beat those powers outright, up front, face-to-face, because they're never, ever going to allow a face-to-face confrontation. They are absolutely terrified of public exposure.
True.
But there is a way to buy some time, and that is learn to bite back. Unfortunately, a lot of altruistic people, they say, well, that's just not my nature. Okay, then you get to be dog food. Okay?
That's right.
The deal is that if, apparently we just had a call that came in, Jerry, and I missed it. My lights did not blink in here. So, folks, hey, if you called and I missed your call, you call back. But, Jerry, you know me, and you know I don't hurt anybody. I won't hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Nor will I agree to be hurt.
Yeah, you're not a person that is provocative as far as, you know, your actions. And neither am I. But I have had some things take place, just as you have, that you're either going to have to stand up and take a look at it and go, okay, give it your best shot, or you're going to back off in a corner and throw up your hands and start crying. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stand up and go, all right, one of us is going to be, you know, full when we're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I don't get on the show and challenge any alleged powers that be to do anything. But by the same token, they know that when they have done things, I have bitten back. You know, if you attack me right here on the air, you know, and everybody can see and hear that it's happening, you can expect that I'm going to track it down, and I'm going to expose the location, if I can, the name of the person behind it. And, you know, you're aware of, you remember the snowboarders.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, the next one of you that calls, the next one of you pranksters that calls, I'm going to make you famous. I'm going to put your name and your phone number on the screen, and I'm going to make you famous. And the very next call was one of those jokers.
Mm-hmm.
Name and phone number went on the screen, and we got results. Same thing has happened with some secret agencies as well. All right, similar things have happened. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, Jerry, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hello, Brent.
Thing about it is, Kevin, a lot of people seem to forget that we do have the right to defend ourselves.
Sure you do. As long as you win.
Yeah. Now, Jerry, I have a question for you. It goes a little bit beyond the current topic.
All right.
When you were placed in that farm building or whatever it was, mm-hmm. they said you had to become a part of this world. Does that mean you are spiritually a part of it permanently, or can you leave?
No, I don't know. I haven't tried leaving, so I guess that's something that remains to be seen. My view of this is that we are spiritually a part of the cosmos. And as a result, you know, we aren't relegated to remaining in any one particular place. Otherwise, we would not be free.
This is true. I was just wondering what your take on it was, because I'm of a similar opinion. So.
Okay. Cool. And incidentally, Brent, I got your email this afternoon. I've not had a chance to address it, but I will address it later tonight or tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
You bet.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. And how about you, ladies and gentlemen. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. It's your opportunity to talk with Jerry Wills. And Jerry is, without a doubt, one of the premier, one of the top, if not the top, explorers of ancient sites. Not an archaeologist. He locates stuff for the archaeologists to take over and do things. He locates lost cities and is in search of whatever records there may be, whatever writings, whatever drawings there may be left by these ancients, so that we can know the story of what has happened in the past. Jerry, this mm-hmm. particular city that you mentioned, that you said it's the people told you it's further back in there, and they said that's the one where the gods lived.
Right.
How did they know that?
I think it was probably handed down over generations to them. I'm really not sure how they know that. It probably, I'm just guessing here, but this is a different kind of place. The other places that Kathy's actually like one of the major forces in finding these. They have very specific features. This place that we were told about has different features altogether. Staircases with stone heads looking up and to the left, and a big stone head over here in the pavilion, statue of some sort of big guy. We don't know who he is. We haven't seen the statue. There were things about this, they called them temples. There were temples back there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. We haven't seen it. It might just be exaggerations on their part, but if it is what it sounds like, it doesn't sound like any place that we've seen before. And to say that that's where the gods lived, well, you know, that certainly conjures up a big neon question mark right over your head.
Yes, it does. Jerry, we have a telephone call, so mm-hmm. caller, let me ask you, we have a break that's just about to take over. Are you willing to hang on through the break?
Sure will, Pat.
All right. You hang in there, and we'll be back to you right after this upcoming break. And we also have a flash message we have to get to. And when we come back from this break, we're going to be in final approach. That means we have only a few minutes left in the show. And we're going to have to run to get all of these answers in. All right, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on final approach, only a few minutes left until we have to bring this one in for a landing. And let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin and Jerry. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. Jerry was pretty much answering my one question, so I'll just go to the next one. Jerry, you talked about made this machine, like is it like a curling photography, or is it just chakra type thing, and is it something you can produce?
No, it's none of those things. What it is, it's a light source that bounces off of the auric field, and it causes a interference pattern to be developed. And as a result of that, you can see the energy being emitted off of, say, your hands, for example, You can use it on any part of your body, of course, but it's easier on your hands. You can move your hands around. It's something I developed quite a number of years ago. I was out of high school. It was probably 1973. I was working in a government lab at the time, recruited out of high school, and it was one of the devices that I made for them that would initiate spontaneous healing, and part of the byproduct is that it lights up the human auric field.
That'd be something that I think would be very substantial on the market if you could somehow. I'll leave it go at that. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
good show.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you for the call. All right, we have a flash message that we want to get to here from Kevin in Australia. He's got three questions. I'm going to take the third question, Kevin. If we have time, we'll back up to number two and number one, okay? But we're kind of up against the time here, so let's get to the third question. And Jerry, he wants to know, what was your most frightening encounter while in South America regarding strange awarenesses of any kind?
Probably at Markawasi. Markawasi is, in the typical sense, a haunted place, but it's only haunted, you know, figuratively speaking, because the energy there is so bizarre. One night we were sitting by the campfire, and a very large UFO just passed overhead, so low you could look in the windows of the thing. That was a bit intimidating. And then just strange lights and actions going on the plateau just beyond us. We used to offer trips to Markawasi as to other places, but folks just stopped going. Anyway, that's a place worth seeing. It's truly amazing. 13,000 foot plateau. It's strewn with figures made of stone, faces, heads, all kinds of stuff. It's just strange. I wouldn't go up there and stay there at night by myself. I wouldn't.
Okay, question number two. That was number three. Number two.
Mm-hmm.
How many giant skeletons have been discovered in South America?
Quite a number. I don't know how many, but I'm aware that they've been found.
Okay. And we had Klaus Donna on.
Mm-hmm.
Klaus Donna told the story of the discovery of the skeletal remains of a 21 foot tall skeleton. He was given a piece of it to take to a lab and have it tested. And they said it is human, and it's a heel bone, you know, from the foot.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing is, this individual is at least five times taller than an average human.
I know Kathy and I were tracking down a story of a bunch of giants that lived in, I think it's called Santa Maria, Ecuador, which is right across the border from Peru. We haven't made it up there, but we know about it.
Are they supposed to be living there now?
No. They were there, and they were raising all kinds of heck with the locals, some really obnoxious things I won't go into because they were pretty ugly, really.
Mm-hmm.
The gods showed up and killed them all.
Okay, then. All right, and question number one, how many cases of cattle mutilations have you been informed about near the inland lakes in South America and also USO sightings?
Number of USO sightings, submerged UFOs off of the coast between Lima and Paracas. There's one area in particular that seems very active, about halfway in between Lima and Paracas. And what was the other part of the question?
Cattle mutilations.
You know, we've had a few reports of cattle mutilations. They don't have very many cattle there. They have llamas. But what we have run into, and it is a bit startling, is human mutilations, where people are found with surgical incisions and organs removed. It's bizarre, and it's in the Amazon jungle.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
I will say this. Down in Argentina, or over mm-hmm. in Argentina, depending on where you're starting from,
mm-hmm.
They do have a lot of cattle in Argentina.
Yeah, they do. We haven't been there, so that's probably why we haven't been exposed to any reports.
They are having cattle mutilations in Argentina. Mm-hmm. I read some reports of that, as a matter of fact, over the weekend. And in Argentina, they are experiencing the cattle mutilation phenomenon. And as you say, in Peru, there's not that many cattle. They have a lot of llamas.
They do have cattle.
Well,
but I haven't. There's not.
Not up in the Andes, they don't, do they?
Oh yeah, I mean the people back at the Tocachi Valley, they have cattle roaming those mountains. They go twice a year to round them up and eat them, sell them, whatever. But there are cattle back there too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But not like herds of them like you expect to see here.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we've got about a minute here. What's the next big project for Wills and Wills here?
Outfitting the prairie schooner, getting it ship shape so that we can hit the road and start doing shows wherever we might land.
Yeah. So it'll be Expeditions TV Studio Mobile.
Yeah, pretty much that. It'll be home. It's actually very nice. I put pictures up at Facebook. If folks want to go there, it's just look for Jerry Wills on Facebook and. Look through the pictures. You'll see the pictures of the prairie. It's called a prairie schooner, which I think is very appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks can see that if they go there.
All right. Well, as always, it's very interesting to talk with you, and I thank you for being on the show. And I know that Kathy is there. I don't know if she can hear me now, but we appreciate her as well. Tonight, not appearing on camera with you, although she has the last two times you've been on.
Yeah, she said, do I have to be on camera tonight? I said, yeah. She says, no, I don't. Kevin would have told me if I did. I said, next time, Kevin, you know what to do.
Yeah, well, I'll take care of that for you, Jerry. not a problem. Not a problem. But, folks, you need to get over and watch the Filipov files. It helps the expeditions to happen. But I'm telling you, folks, the information is ground-shaking information. Consider who it is that's talking. Dr. Lachizar Filipov, or I think he says Lachizar.
Lachizar, yeah.
Lachizar Filipov. All right, we have come to the end of the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.